Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. Ajahn Yatiko was going to give the talk this evening, and he just asked me if I would give the talk. So I have no idea what to say, but I suppose I could start by telling more Tudong stories, fill in some of the blanks. I left out, on the talk on the Wanpra, I left out a lot of details of different stories, and there's probably not really enough stories left for a full talk, but we'll see what comes out of it. I guess one part I left out was as we walked north from Eureka towards Arcata, we didn't walk on 101 that day. We went over a bridge after we parted ways with the man from the Church of Satan who had been speaking with us. We walked over a really large bridge towards the coast and walked up, I think it's Highway 255, walking north. It's a 101 alternate, so it's always nice to not be walking on the freeway whenever possible. And we got to a place called the Humboldt Nature Center, and it's kind of a small building built into the side of a sand dune just west and a little bit south of Arcata. And it's kind of interesting. It's all made out of recycled materials, and the bathroom is like 100% quote-unquote green bathroom. And we decided to look for a place to camp near there, so that was one of the days that we camped in between, kind of in an indention in between four sand dunes. And then the next morning, deciding we're going to go alms around in Arcata. And so walking on from there east for maybe 4 miles or so into Arcata, people had told us before, oh yeah, Arcata's a really cool town, you get really well supported there. But still just having no idea what to expect, and it's maybe 9 or 10 a.m. we got into Arcata and put our robes on, prepared our bowls for alms round, getting ready to collect food. We started walking down a residential road towards the city center, and this woman who looked like she was kind of poor, it was kind of like a lower middle class neighborhood, a lot of trailers and run down small houses, and this lady and her little daughter, her husband, she called us over and asked what we were doing. We explained we're Buddhist monks. And she wanted to offer us some money, so of course we said we don't use money, but we're on alms round, we're seeking food right now. And so she spontaneously offered us 3 tacos from Jack in the Box, which she was about to eat herself. So that was the first food that we collected in Arcata. And all of these offerings are just moving, even a small, seemingly small offering like that, because it's someone who is poor and offered us the food that they were about to eat themselves. And we chanted a blessing. People were always happy with a blessing chant. They're always, almost inevitably, they'd be moved by it. And kept walking. And we would look for a co-op to stand in front of, to see if anybody would offer us food there, or like Safeway was kind of the next best, if there was a Safeway, but we didn't see a Safeway, so we saw large co-op in the center of Arcata. And so we went to stand there. And usually we'd have to stand maybe half an hour before anyone would engage us. And so we were standing there. And nothing's really happening. After a while, a woman comes by, just talks to us, just says, thank you so much for just doing what you're doing and bringing peace to the world. And she goes away. And then the person who seemed like the manager had kind of come out once, and he was kind of looking at us, and we kind of suspected we were going to get asked to leave. And sure enough, he came out again. He's a big guy, muscular. And he asked what we were doing there. We said, first he said, are you guys begging? And I didn't really know how to answer that, because I suppose in a sense we are, but we're not allowed to ask for anything. But if somebody comes up to us and engages us, then we're allowed to explain what we're doing, and if they want to make an offering, they can, if they want to make an offering of food. So we told this guy, the manager, he said, we're not allowed to, ask people for offerings, which we suppose begging would mean we're actually asking and approaching people, but people have to approach us. And he said, I know, but in essence, you're begging. I've been to Asia before, and I know what you're up to. And he said, I'm going to have to ask you to leave. So he asked us to leave from the co-op, which was kind of surprising. We thought the co-op is like hippies and Buddhists. And he asked us to leave, and then as we were leaving, he said, and you're also standing in front of our bulletin board. You're blocking our bulletin board. And so he gave us that, and then I thought, oh, that's kind of strange. But then we left, kept walking from there. It was kind of getting closer to midday, so we weren't really sure if we would get more than these three tacos from Jack in the Box. But we kept walking down the road. It looked like we were getting kind of to the edge of Arcata, and this guy stops in his car and says, "Hey, are you guys like monks, Ajahn Chah monks, Watnana Chat?" And so he said, "Yeah, we're part of that tradition." And he said, "Are you seeking anything? Do you need anything? Can I get you something to eat or anything?" And we said, "Yeah, well, we're on alms round, so that'd be great." So he took us into a restaurant and got us a bunch of Thai food from this. It wasn't a Thai restaurant, but they were selling Thai food there. And he sat down and explained to us that he's like 37 years old now, but when he was 17, he had been to Wat Nanachat, and he remembers Ajahn Pasano as the abbot there, and told us about his visit there and how he had a really good stay and was always inspired by Wat Nanachat. So he got us food, and we thought if we weren't asked to leave from the co-op, we probably wouldn't have seen this guy, so things always happen for the best. And so then we had plenty of food, and then we kept walking from there to look for a place to sit down and eat, maybe a park or something. And as we were walking, this guy came up and started talking to us, and he kind of looked like he might be homeless, but maybe not. He's really just intelligent in the way he spoke and really clear. He told us he just wanted to chat with us for a bit. And he said he was, for years, he had been part of this wandering Japanese group, the Nam-myoho Renge-kyo group, and wandered all. He said he'd walked all over the country with these Japanese monks. And he's also a haiku master. And he was just telling us a lot of haikus. And I think I mentioned this briefly in the last talk, or maybe it was Midnight Tea, maybe it wasn't recorded, but he left us with a haiku, which I can't just spontaneously come up with haikus like he did, and this probably isn't actually a haiku as far as the syllables, but it went something along the lines of traveling along a path of happiness. Bliss we have is higher, peace is higher than the bliss, something like that. Peace is higher than bliss. Traveling along in happiness, peace higher than bliss. So that's kind of nice. So we were contemplating that as we walked on. And then we ended up eating that day in a church parking lot. And walking on from there, that's when we met Orion, the Tai Chi teacher who gave us an hour-long Qigong lesson on the way out of Arcata. But before that, before seeing Orion, it was one of the few times actually the only time I've experienced a racist comment, and it was just a bunch of young guys driving by, and they, I probably shouldn't say this on the recording, but they used the N-word that's used for black people and very angrily and yelled at us. So they, and because I was born in America, I'm white. It was very strange to be called that, but also really a very interesting experience. And so another story, which is moving on from Arcata, this guy Orion, the Tai Chi teacher, he had given us a ride to the outskirts of a town just north of Arcata called McKinleyville. He dropped us off in a place that he explained a lot of travelers wait there and get rides from there, so he thought that would be a good place to drop us off. And so he dropped us off in this park in McKinleyville, and where he dropped us off, there was I could only describe them as a roving band of street urchins, and they were a bunch of young guys, you know, dressed differently, ragged, like, really been on the road and hitchhiking all over. So as soon as we got dropped off, these guys started talking to us, and I have to hand it to Tanti Tapo. He really picked up the ball and said some of the right things, I think, so that we didn't have to have a relationship with these people. He said, they were like, oh, you guys are traveling, travel with us, you know, we're traveling too. I'm from Georgia, I'm from Washington, we're all going north on 101, you guys can hook up with us and travel, and you can camp with us tonight. And Tanti Tapo said, we're Buddhist monks following a very strict code of precepts, and it would be nearly impossible for you to relate to us, and we can't camp with you. and then they're like, oh, well, you know, we like you guys, we want to travel with you guys. And we're saying, well, we know the way we get food, we don't use money and we stand in front of markets. And they're like, that's what we do. We don't use money and we stand in front of markets. And then, so after that, they're like, there's a river right over here. You guys can get water. You guys camp with us. And there's maybe 10 of them in this group. And, They really looked pretty dodgy, so we wanted to get away from them, and we didn't want them to follow us. So we said, well, yeah, let's go camp. And so they all walked towards the river, and then we quickly walked the other direction. And then we didn't stop walking for about 5 miles. we just kept walking and walking after that and get some distance between. then we were walking through. We were actually looking for a place to camp. It was getting later in the day, and we were walking through this town, McKinleyville, and we kind of wandered into this huge residential area, and we were roughly heading north and parallel to 101, but kind of walking and walking really far through this residential area, and we're kind of going through all these houses and streets, and eventually we come to a dead end on the street, and there's kind of a trail, so we just start following this trail after the dead end street, and then it leads to another part of the residential area, and we keep going. And we're kind of like trying to find a way out of this residential area. And these two guys, they're kind of, you know, gangsters and look maybe Latino or something. And they're in like a Lincoln Town Car, and they stop, and it kind of seemed like they wanted to make fun of us or something, but he's kind of like, there's two guys in the car, and one of them's like, "So explain yourselves, what religion are you? What are you guys doing?" And he said, "Oh, we're Buddhist monks, and we're on a walking pilgrimage, and we're walking on faith, not using money." And then when we said walking on faith, they really seemed to become very respectful, and they said, "Oh, yeah, walking on faith, and do you have any advice for us? And our life is really difficult, and we're just full of anger, and can you give us any advice?" And he said, "Well, you know, just patient endurance is always good, and just contemplate that any difficulty you're going through, it's going to change no matter what it is." And they're kind of listening, and that's endurance, patience, that's great. And they just thanked us and took off. And then after that we kept walking, and we got to this gigantic field. It looked like we were kind of on the north side of McKinleyville. Started walking through this huge field and got to another main road, and then we were at an airport, and it said Arcata Airport. I thought, that's strange, Arcata Airport. And this is like the north side of McKinleyville. So we were kind of next to this airport, and we kept walking down a road, and we got to this Holiday Inn Express, which was kind of on the way back to 101 from this airport. And had to rest. We've been walking for a while, and it'd been kind of a long day. And this is kind of the interesting thing. Each day you would think of a previous event, and you'd think it was several days ago, but it was actually that morning. So we're thinking, yeah, we got up from camping in the sand dunes at Humboldt Nature Center, and then walked towards Arcata like 5 miles. And that was actually that morning. And now we're like at this airport and walking into this Holiday Inn Express parking lot. So we go into this Holiday Inn Express. It's kind of eerie. There's nobody really around. And we go by the lobby and just sit down on a bench and rest, decide what we're going to do, because it's kind of getting late. And we were kind of in the sun a lot that day too, so we're really exhausted. So we just took a rest, and we're drinking some water, and go into the Holiday Inn Express. I go in on my own to use the bathroom, and there's a lady at the front desk, and I say, "Hello, where do you have the bathroom in here?" And she points out where the bathroom is, and then she says, "Would you like some cookies?" And she's got this gigantic plate of fresh cookies, and I'm thinking, "Oh, it's the evening." Yeah. But it's kind of a nice gesture. And kind of surreal, because there was nobody really around except this lady with this plate of cookies. So I go in, and Tanti Tapo's kind of like, "Let's just wait here, and maybe they'll give us a room or something." You never know. So it's like, okay. So we waited for a while, and of course nothing's happening, and we're hoping the lady with the cookies is going to say, like, you know, "You guys want a place to stay tonight or something?" But of course, that's like crazy. They probably think we're from some other country, and, you know, they probably see all sorts of stuff, people coming out of these airports. So we just keep walking. And then we get to a bike path, which is on the ocean side of 101. So we're thinking, oh, that's great. And so we just walk along this bike path. And at this point, it was one of the days when we walked farther than usual. We probably walked about 15 miles by this time, and it's maybe 8 p.m. or something. It's getting late, so we're thinking, where are we going to camp? So we just keep walking along this bike path, and we saw a sign. There was a campground maybe 1 or 2 miles ahead, Clam Beach Campground. So we keep going, and we get to this campground, and it's starting to get dark. And we're thinking, well, we'll just camp on the beach again. But then right when we get to this campground, this guy kind of looks like a traveler as well, and looks like he might be traveling on foot. He's sitting at a campsite at this Clam Beach campground, and he just calls us over and he says, "Hey, you guys want some tea? Want to share some tea with us?" And so we had remembered our Tudong rule number one: never turn down an offering for tea. And because Orion earlier that day had also offered us tea and then ended up giving us a Qigong lesson. And by this point, we'd realized that people who offer tea are almost inevitably good people. So if they're not good people, it's going to be like, you know, some comment or trying to mock us or something. But an offering of tea always seemed to have a good result. So Tudong rule number one: always accept a tea offering. And actually, we never came up with a rule number two. That was the only rule. So we go, and he has some Indian basil sage something or other tea. So he's offering us tea, and we sit at this campsite. And then this other guy from, I forget where he's from, some from South Dakota or something, and he's on a road trip. I forget his name, but he had purchased the campsite, and he comes up, and you know, people at this campsite, they were, you know, smoking pot and drinking, and but the guy who offered us tea wasn't. He was sober, and but then this other guy who bought the campsite, he said, "Oh, I'd like to offer the campsite to you guys. I'm just going to sleep in my car tonight." So we said, "Oh, sure." And then they made a fire, and we had kind of a bonfire, and we were drinking this tea. And this guy's name is Dylan, and he explained that he was kind of hitchhiking and also traveling on foot on 101 and traveling around, but he was actually heading north at the time on his way to Trinidad, which was maybe 10 or 12 miles north of this campground, and he was going to go and protest some redwood clear-cutting that was happening there. And so he was on his way there, and then he asked if he could walk with us the next day. And so we said, "Yeah, that'd be great." So that night, we camped at this beachside campground, and it was a bit strange because there was, people go camping, and there was kind of a funny couple from, older couple from, I think they're from Missouri, and they were on some sort of road trip, and they were camping there, and the lady was very, very drunk, and she came and sat around the campfire, and so we were kind of, me and Titapo, Dylan, and the other guy who owned the campsite, we were kind of discussing Dhamma around the campfire, and then she comes and sits around the campfire with us, and she's literally just falling over, and she plops down at the campfire, and she's kind of staring at us, and she says, "Bedouins, right? You guys are Bedouins." And I said to Titapo, what are Bedouins? And he said, "I think they're Muslims of some sort, Muslim wanderers or something." And so he said, "Well, we're not Bedouins, we're Buddhist monks." And so she says, "Buddhist monks. So you guys are good." And but what I want to know is, how good are you? And so I said, "Well, I good enough, I guess." And she seemed satisfied with that, and she said, "When I saw you guys, it was just like purity." And it makes for interesting conversation. And then her husband came over, and I think he could handle his alcohol a little bit better than her, and he started talking and was asking about our travels, and we started discussing about John Muir, and yeah, got into some interesting discussions, John Muir stories, John Muir traveling to Yosemite. And anyway, we camped there that night, and next morning set off with Dylan along, continuing along this bike path, and then once that path ended, we had to get on 101 again. And it's interesting having a layperson with us, and this guy knew a lot about herbs and was pointing out all these different medicinal herbs to us, and he could pick berries, he could pick all sorts of things. He ended up picking a lot of wild spearmint for us that we made tea out of later. And he was really curious about Dhamma, really wanting to get the meal for us that day. He explained he had money but wasn't really using money. He was kind of saying how incredibly easy it is to live out of dumpsters, because in America, in California in particular, anywhere you go, you can go to almost any dumpster and there's like really good food that's just been thrown away because it's a day old, or they have, especially places like Safeway or these co-ops, they have rules where they can't sell things that are, say, over a certain number of days over the expiration date and whatnot. They ended up just throwing it away. And he even said that a lot of brand new clothes just get thrown away because there's some defect or a lot of factories throw away things just because there's a minuscule defect in it. So I acquired a t-shirt from a dumpster from this guy Dylan's that I still have. It's my one Pangsukula cloth gaining on this tudong. But anyway, we're walking and then this lady picks us up after not too long, and she was heading, I think she was heading south, but she turned around to pick us up. And that morning, Dylan had collected some seaweed off the beach and had dried it, and we had had seaweed for breakfast that morning, like fresh bull kelp seaweed from the beach, and it was actually really good. And so this lady that picked us up, she explained that she was on her way to the beach to go and collect seaweed to dry. And then we said, well, we actually had seaweed for breakfast this morning. And then she said, I had seaweed for breakfast this morning too. And then we got talking to her, and then she said she's actually, that day was going to be going to a teacher training in Mendocino at Did We Know About Yoga Mendocino. And she knows Mary Pafford, and good friend, and I'm blanking on this lady's name right now, but she knew all about Abhayagiri. She'd been here before. And so she ended up taking us into the town of Trinidad and pointing out a good restaurant where Dylan could offer us the meal. So Dylan offered the meal that day. Really big meal at this cafe, and he's just explaining about his life. He's lived all over the world. His parents had some sort of job with the UN or something where they just had to travel to all sorts of different countries. So he had actually, this man Dylan had gone to school in India and in Thailand and had been all over the place. And so after that meal, he took us to the store. He got us some medicines. We were running low on ibuprofen. Got us a few things and got a whole bunch of stuff for himself, food and whatnot, because he thought he might be doing some tree sitting, which seems to be a common way of protesting clear cuts these days. You go and sit in a tree until they pull you out and cut it down. So so he got a bunch of food, and we chatted with him, chanted a blessing, and said goodbye to him. I'm kind of curious as to how his tree sitting went, but didn't hear anything from him after that. And then after parting ways with Dylan, we were thinking, wow, we've met so many people on this tudong so far. And right after that is when we met Alina that afternoon, the lady who, the Western woman who has the peace pipe, is in part of the peace pipe lineage. But already explained all about her in the on the Wanpra. So it's kind of just this string of meeting one good person after another. And it's really incredible how many good people are doing good things in the world. And it's an interesting reflection when we come out of our kind of bubble here in the monastery and go out in the world. And people really are, for the most part, well-intentioned and want to be doing something good. So I'm trying to think now where I left off on the Tudong stories in Oregon. And I think it was when we were in a place called Langloy, and I ended up meeting up with an uncle of mine who I hadn't seen since I was 17, my dad's older brother. And so this was kind of interesting because I thought he lived in Bandon, which was north of Langloy, but then this young guy who had offered us the meal that day and had offered to drive us to Bandon to possibly find my uncle, he had a phone, so I called my mom in Hawaii to ask what is Eric's phone number. My uncle's name is Eric, so what is his phone number? And I called my mom, and she said, "Oh, I'm emailing Eric right now to say that you might be in the area." And so she gave me his phone number, and then I ended up calling, and then his wife answered, and turns out they're in Langloy. So the guy who was driving us, he did a quick U-turn and goes back to Langloy. Turns out he knows my uncle because the guy who offered us the meal that day is the owner of the market, just inherited it from his father, and my uncle, of course, is a regular at this market, so they know each other. So we go to my uncle's house, and then it started raining. So this was pretty good timing that we were able to get out of the rain by, making a connection with my uncle. I wasn't quite sure what to expect because a relative I haven't seen in a long time, not sure if they wanted to, if they're interested in what we're doing or if they want to put us up at their place. But once we broke the ice and started talking with them, they were very happy to have us. And really big house, really interesting people. And I think I could appreciate my uncle a lot more now for who he is than when I was 17. They said that their memory of me as a 17-year-old was, "Hi, gotta go hang out with the friends, bye." That was their only interaction. This wasn't much for conversation or anything. Anything much. So it's kind of getting to know me as a new person and as a monk, as an adult. And I think they had a good time with us there. And we ended up staying there for 2 nights, and they offered the meal, they offered a couple of meals. And it was raining. Then they were going to go for vacation, so they then took us north, passing a kind of dangerous section of highway where there wasn't much of a shoulder. And it's also raining, and my aunt was worried about us. If we're going to be walking in the rain, they want to be sure we have a place to stay. So they were leaving. We couldn't stay another night there, but they took us to Coos Bay, and then we were able to get a hold of a man who used to be a monk here, Scott Boltinghouse. He was Obaso, and he had given us an invitation to ask for anything if we ever needed anything during the Tudong. And so my uncle took us to the library, and I got to talk with my uncle for a long time one-on-one while Tanti Tapo contacted Scott and saw if he could get us maybe a cheap hotel room in Coos Bay just to get out of the rain one more night. And so that was successful, and Scott ended up getting us a not so cheap hotel room. He wanted to offer us something nice and got us the Best Western in Coos Bay. So we were able to get out of the rain, and then after that continue on our walk. Yeah, and so being on the road, it's just a really strong reflection on the goodness that other people are willing to do for other people, and also a strong reflection on the unexpected, on impermanence, on uncertainty. North of Coos Bay, we walked across this incredible bridge, the Coos Bay Bridge, and then Yeah, again, it's kind of getting hot out, and it looked like it might rain again. We weren't sure about that. It's almost like we were running away from this storm that was kind of slowly following us. And we looked behind us after we passed this gigantic bridge. We looked behind us and it was raining on the bridge. And so we kept walking, and it's a very, very long stretch of highway, just a very straight stretch of highway with nothing. And we had a vague idea that we'd be going to a town called Lakeside and maybe looking for a campsite near there. And so, but within, we'd maybe walked 5 or 6 miles out of Coos Bay after passing this large bridge. And yeah, and a couple in a, actually, one of these things too is just the endless lessons of being on Tudong is I had developed this perception in my mind. I would see the different cars go by, and I would think, you know, certain types of people have certain types of cars. And I had the thought that somebody in a Dodge Ram will never stop for us. But then a Dodge Ram pulled over and stopped for us. So these has a t traveling has a way of teaching us that not to believe in our perceptions. And so a couple got out, and the guy starts talking to us, and he said, "You know, what are you guys doing? We're really interested in, we're Christians, but we're really interested in just hearing about you guys' travels and what you're doing." And so we explain everything that we're doing and our rules as Buddhist monks, and then of course they want to support us. And so they take us to this market, maybe a mile up ahead, and they buy us some allowables that we can take in the afternoon. They ask us anything else we need, and these people are well, obviously well known in this community here at this lakeside place. And so of course we start meeting people, talk to the shopkeeper. She's very interested in what we're doing. This couple explains that the shopkeeper is a really great person because she employs their son who is has a, I think it's Down syndrome, plus he's blind, but they employ him anyway. And just we're talking with them. People are coming in and out. They're introducing us to people. And then they took us to a campground not too far down the road and paid for a campsite for us. And just really nice. And their names were Carl and River, and they're some of the people who also offered that if anybody else does Tudong in the future, that can look them up and stay at their place. So very, very nice people. And something that was interesting is, although they were very sure about being Christians, they also themselves believe in reincarnation and impermanence. And so you get people, although you know, Christianity is not cut and dry. If people consider themselves Christians, and everyone's an individual, so in the end, everyone has their own beliefs. And so a lot of their beliefs really, really agreed with what we believe as Buddhists. Say reincarnation, they very strongly agreed with if you do something bad, you get bad back, and if you do good, you receive good. You get out what you put in. Yeah, so they got a campsite for us. And the ranger lady who was at this campground was also very interested in us. So she ended up coming by our campsite with firewood. She offered us some firewood for a fire. And then the next day, wanted to walk with us out of the campground, just from our campsite to the entrance of the campground. But yeah, she brought us breakfast. She brought us donuts and milk for breakfast, and walked with us. And another younger ranger also walked with us, and just asking questions. Then I'm trying to think what happened after that. So yeah, that was the morning that we walked 6 miles to a place called Winchester Bay, And this was also one of those days where we found a very, very small market, and it was a very small town, and it was also getting very close to the cutoff where we wouldn't be able to eat anymore. So we're kind of in front of this one market, and it turned out it wasn't really the main market. We walked over to this other market, and again, right before we wouldn't be able to eat anymore, a guy came, and he said, this is something you don't see every day, and what are you guys doing? And then he ends up wanting us to offer us money. We say we can't use money, as usual, so we're receiving food. He wants to get us food. And then right before we go follow him into this store, another lady runs up and gives him money and says, you know, here's for some support for the food for the monks. So, and then she just took off. We didn't really get a chance to chant a blessing for her. But yeah, this guy is basically getting us anything we want in this deli. And then he's saying how he's depressed and asking us if we could help him out at all. And we're explaining to him about how attachment causes suffering and how the path of the Buddha is the path leading to the ending of suffering and understanding the arising and the cessation of suffering. And he said, oh, really, you know, not attaching to anything is the way to end suffering? And we're like, yeah, that's the teaching of the Buddha. And he said, you know, I could kind of see that, and I'm really depressed, and I'm taking a lot of medication for my depression, but all this suffering is just because of attachment to a woman. And I can see how if I was able to let go of that attachment that, I wouldn't be able to just destroy myself with all this depression and this suffering. So he was just very grateful for, being able to learn a little bit about attachment. And we parted ways with him. It was very close to 1 o'clock when we couldn't eat anymore. So we just sat on a bench right outside that market and ate there. And then because we were there outside of this market, many, many people were coming by and asking what we're doing. So we're kind of trying to eat before one, but also talking to people and answering their questions. And then after our meal was finished, this guy one of the more interesting people we met, he came up to us, and we ended up talking to this one guy for about 2 hours. And he had been a Navy SEAL in Vietnam and also had worked as a prison guard in San Quentin. And he told us what I found was a moving story of his time in San Quentin. Also, he's a lumberjack and American Buddhist. So he's definitely considers himself a Buddhist, but doesn't really like to tell people he's Buddhist. But he's telling us about this experience he had working in San Quentin. And there was a prison riot was about to happen, and there was about 200 prisoners in the cafeteria, and they had their like butter knives, and they were gonna there was gonna be some sort of riot, and so the guards were all lined up on an upper level with their rifles, and the warden is there, and they're getting ready for violence, and so the prisoners are getting more and more worked up, and they're gonna do some sort of riot or some sort of charge against the prison guards. And so I just have to say his name. This guy, Jerry, he's working there as a prison guard, and he tells the warden, you know, I'm just going to go have a word with them. And the warden is saying, you know, don't do that. They're armed and dangerous down there. He said, no, I'm just going to go down. So he goes down, and Jerry, he's already considers himself a Buddhist at this time, and he's been practicing metta, loving kindness. And so he goes down and he goes into the midst of these prisoners, and he says, you know, who's the spokesperson here? And one prisoner kind of steps forward and he says, can you guys explain to me why you're about to riot? And so then the spokesperson kind of explains it to him. I don't even remember the reason, but then Jerry basically says, like, well, yeah, we can do that for you. You know, we can meet your demands. There doesn't have to be a riot. And then everyone starts calming down. And the prisoner who was kind of their spokesperson is kind of like, well, thanks for listening to us. And so Jerry goes back up, and then everybody, all the prisoners dissipate. The energy is completely gone. And the warden says, well, what did you do? And this guy, he says, well, I just listened to them, and I just heard what they had to say. And it wasn't anything serious, but nobody was willing to listen to them. And then there was going to be this huge riot, and people were possibly going to get hurt or even killed. And it's just like, all you had to do was go down and hear them out. And you don't even really need to do anything for them. It's just the power of listening, the power of giving somebody a voice. And I thought that was really interesting, just that you can dissipate that much energy through just listening to somebody. And so after that, after we talked to this guy Jerry for a couple of hours, he asked, can he support us in any way? He really wanted to support us, get us some allowables. We were kind of had sugar and honey already, and the weight of our packs was kind of heavy, but he really wanted to support us. So we said, well, yeah, you can get us some things. And one of the things that's allowable for us is marshmallows, because sugar is allowable and marshmallows are pure sugar. So we said, okay, well, we'll get some marshmallows and other little candy items that are allowable for us in the afternoon. And he slapped this bag of marshmallows down on the checkout counter, and he told the lady there, he said, it's not every day that somebody can get marshmallows out of Jerry. And, and we thought maybe we were the only people who ever got marshmallows out of him. So he was on a motorcycle. He rode off after that. We started walking again. So it's almost 9:30, and there's many, many more stories, but I think I've done my duty in covering for Ajahn Yatiko this evening, and we'll save part three for Ajahn Yatiko's next talk. And I think we'll just leave it there this evening and let the lessons and the stories just speak for themselves.